What if you had a fully formed personality, even when you were a single-celled organism? That would be a ridiculous premise, wouldn't it? Well, here we are anyway, watching Look Who's Talking, which was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Hi, my name's Sean Collier. It's the number one movie in America. I am here with two street racers who aren't very good at it and are basically just here to lose to Dom. It's Robin Hitchcock.
Vroom, vroom, vroom.
And Camila Adams.
I second that. Vroom.
Fast and the Furious. The is important. Landed with a score of 70. That's our 37th overall film on the chart. This is like broad blockbuster territory for us because it is just above Ready Player One and National Treasure and just below Mask of Zorro. If we see a competent summer hit, we give it a 70.
I mean, that's what I want, you know?
Right.
Mm-hmm. With the exception of Ready Player One. But even that, like, I don't hate. Yeah. Right. I just want big, dumb movies that make me happy.
Right. And especially if they were seen in a movie theater, then it's like, you know what? In the summertime, it's like, yes, perfect. That's fine. Like, this is what you wanted. 2 hours in AC in the dark to be slightly entertained with your snackies.
That just made me literally crave popcorn.
I know, like, right? I
could
really
smell
close,
popcorn when you were saying that.
I came close to driving up to the waterfront and going and buy popcorn the other day and pretzel bites.
I saw this in action yesterday. Cinemark is selling a thing that is literally like a pillowcase-sized bag of popcorn to take home. I think it's the equivalent of like three tubs.
What?
That you can go and get it fresh out of the thing and go home and watch what you were going to watch. And
I love this.
As much as it feels like them hastening their own demise, Hey, if it makes them a couple extra bucks, knock yourself out.
I still stand by the best movie theater popcorn I've ever had is from the Hollywood Theater, and I am upset that I don't even know if that theater still has the same, you know, recipe or equipment or whatever. But yeah, that was the best movie theater popcorn I've ever had.
I'm buying it now when I don't want it. And like, I don't have an excuse to anymore. Like, I'm going to the movies. But like, because there was a stretch where I had no movie theater popcorn, now I'll go in and be like, I am full. I don't need anything. So what's the small? How much is the small then?
$12.
Yeah, exactly. So speaking of big hits, this Look Who's Talking was like a giant movie, everybody.
What happened?
I probably like caught parts of it on TV. Like, it is likely that I had seen this before, but I had no clear memories of it.
I don't know how or when. I probably saw it on TV at some point. What year was this again?
89.
But yeah, I definitely never watched. I never watched it on purpose. There was never a, this is what I want to watch today.
I remember watching it a good bit. I also think this movie really resonated with me because I saw it when my mom was pregnant with my little brother.
Interesting.
And so, like, I had just learned, like, what a sperm is. And so some of the opening sequences, I was like, huh.
How old were you?
I was 6.
Okay.
Those opening sequences, which we'll do the segments in a minute, but let's leave the sperms and the eggs here.
I mean, everyone got your clue. Everyone got, you know, for those who don't follow us on Twitter, Sean tweets what he's watching, and when it's an Omia movie, he gives a cryptic gif clue, and it was Homer acting like a sperm, and like 5 people were like, look who's talking.
Yeah.
That is like the thing that is stuck in the mind of people our age, that this movie has sperm in it.
I couldn't even figure out what Homer was doing. Like, I was like, what is, I knew what the movie was and still.
Well, I'm looking at it and I'm thinking, what am I looking at? Because I'm like, this is not computer graphics. This is too early for that. I assume it's not a really tiny camera. And this is all practical effects. They sat around thinking, how can we film something that looks conceivably like sperm entering an egg, which is wild for a mainstream, mostly family appropriate movie.
Yeah. I forgot or didn't know this is how the thing opened, and I was eating whilst watching it. Not a good idea. Not
the fallopian tubes are particularly icky looking.
Yeah, all of it is just...
Okay. I mean, for as middle of the road... All right, anyway. Maybe you haven't seen Look Who's Talking. A lot of people did. But if you are, you know, if you missed this cultural moment by being born, I don't know, after the mid-80s, yesterday. Let's tell you what happens. It's Camila's turn, right? I mean, I feel like you can knock it out pretty quickly. Yeah. Let's see how long it takes. Here's Camila Adams with a 60-second recap, and go.
Molly is having an affair with a married man and gets knocked up. The day she finds out the dude has another side piece, she goes into labor. She catches a cab alone to the hospital, even though her friend was like two blocks away. James is the cab driver and ends up in the delivery room with her. She tells the baby Mikey it's her mission to find him a daddy. James shows up to return her purse, and she agrees to let the stranger babysit her kid while she goes on dates to find him a daddy. We hear the baby's thoughts in Bruce Willis's voice. There's a bunch of Molly and James should date. They have a blowout. James stops coming around. Married dude shows back up after a year of radio silence. He says he left his wife. She's stoked about them getting back together, but he's a jerk to Mikey, so she finally kicks him to the curb. Molly is called for an emergency with James's grandpa. It's cool. She straightens it out, but Gramps loses Mikey. Mikey is put in a considerably dangerous situation, but James and Molly find him unharmed, and they decide they love each other.
Yep. I forgot Gramps was in the movie, so that was even more detail that was strictly necessary at a 49-second recap.
Gramps is part of the tortured justification for John Travolta sticking around in her life.
Oh, gotcha, because he needs to use her address.
Correct.
It's simultaneously, like, tortured and overly complicated, which you shouldn't be able to do at once.
Because really just should be that she's like, do you want to babysit him? I need a babysitter.
Yeah.
The end, right? Hey, I returned your purse. Thank you so much.
Right.
My babysitter just canceled. Can you cover? And then he's good at it. Okay? That's all we needed.
Right. Ish. Yeah.
And, it's hard to find babysitters.
I'm here to tell you it is. I really hate this Molly character.
Okay, Colin hated her too, and I was like, how much of this is because it's Kirstie Alley? Like, how much of Kirstie Alley, the person's personality, is mapping onto Molly?
I don't know, but I'm old enough to have had a decent relationship with Kirstie Alley in the early years around this time. You know, she was, you know, the cool...
Rebecca.
Yeah, the cool chick from Cheers with a deep voice like mine, you know, like I could relate to her, you know, that kind of thing. And she wasn't, you know, the poster child for like what conventionally attractive. And so like I was cool with her. And then like, you know, years later, it's like, oh, you're a fuck. And so like...
Yeah.
And since then, it's just like I haven't really had much of like a connection, not connection, but like just like being around what Kirstie Alley is exuding these days. So... I really just hate the Molly, the character.
I was a kid when I watched Cheers. I didn't have a deep voice yet. I don't actually, in real life, don't have a deep voice, but in my head I do. And I thought she was the coolest. I thought Rebecca was the coolest.
Right.
And I definitely liked this character. And I, when Colin was calling her a bitch, I was like, she's a ball buster, right? Like she is mean, right? She makes snarky, mean jokes that she really doesn't have any reason to be that snarky and mean, but I think she's funny, and there are people out there who are just like that. And if I didn't hate Kirstie Alley because she is racist and otherwise unpleasant, and if I were still 6 years old, I think I'd like her more. But watching it now, I'm kind of like, geez, Molly, like, smile once.
I don't even have a problem with her being a ball bust. I think that part of that aspect, like, that just completely went over my head. That has nothing to do with it. She makes terrible decisions all around, and she's super hyper focused on getting a dude back in her life, and that's what really pisses me off about her.
But who among us?
Damn, you have like, and it's still fresh in my mind, and it's still fresh on my spirit. A newborn in the house. It's like, I mean, I have a man in the house, but it's like, damn, I couldn't imagine if I was doing this by myself that I'd just be like, oh my god, I need to go start dating. There's no fucking way. There's no fucking way.
I got a little bit of the sense that part of, I thought it was interesting that you framed it as that she was like, I have a mission to find a father for this kid. Because in my brain, it was more like, I have a mission to get away from this child periodically, which I respect.
No, it's just, I mean, yeah, I respect that too. But she was like, one of the first things she said to Mikey was like, we're going to get you a daddy.
Yeah.
And that's when I was just like, oh, okay. It's like this.
Before we go any further, I messaged you all offline about this, but do we all understand that this movie is about Harold Ramis being a dick?
Who's Harold Ramis? Oh, yes.
Okay.
Harold Ramis, yes.
Harold Ramis, Egon Spengler.
Wait, what?
What? Huh?
George Siegel's character is based on Amy Heckerling's experience with Harold Ramis impregnating her and then saying, for a long time, I'm going to leave my wife for you. And then he was like, actually, I'm leaving my wife for a younger woman.
I had no idea about any of this.
So, wow.
So this was like full on, like, this was an emotional project, which might be why I couldn't find the rhythm of this movie. And it was like fucking with me. And I think that could be why, because Amy was in her feelings.
Yeah.
When everything
and like literally this all came out after he died. It was his daughter was like, so now that my dad's dead, I want to tell you about the time when I was 16 and I found out I have a sister. And in that article, she literally says that when he told her, he was like, have you ever seen Look Who's Talking? That's me. Now, to be fair, Amy Heckerling was also married to another person. The child she named Molly spelled the same way. And she was raised thinking that Amy Heckerling's husband was her father, but it was Harold Ramis.
Did Amy's husband think it was his too?
Uh-huh.
Because she just blew up a whole bunch of people's spot. like that kid blew up everybody's spot.
So I'm free to blame the affair itself at this point.
Right.
Sure.
As long as I can still be annoyed with how Harold Ramis was treated in Ghostbusters Afterlife while acknowledging these problematic aspects of his personality. As long as I can have both of those.
Okay, yes.
Okay, great.
But it definitely is wild watching this movie. This is the first time I've watched it knowing that.
Wow.
And like, I was like, wait a second, is this about Harold Ramis? And then it was Groundhog Day when I was watching it, so I put on Groundhog Day and I was like, God, I keep thinking about George Siegel and Look Who's Talking.
And that's why you were having problems.
I messaged you guys and then I was like, I need to get my facts straight on this. But yeah, when I saw that quote that was like he said to his own daughter, I am the character in Look Who's Talking, I was like, okay, well, I'm turning off Groundhog Day.
Was that like on his deathbed? Because, I mean, how could she go through the rest of his life just like not side-eyeing him? Just like, You did her dirty.
Yeah. Like the article, and I think it's an excerpt from her memoir or something, and it's very much written as one of those like, I'm a bad man who does bad things kind of thing that guys do when they get caught being scumbags.
Gross.
Yeah.
Is this why it's not actually funny? Does that explain?
Right.
No, that's too much editorializing before the following facts.
Sorry.
Look Who's Talking was released October 13th, 1989. It was the 20th number one film of the year. Won that weekend with $12.1 million, easily defeating fellow debut Halloween 5, The Revenge of Michael Myers, which debuted in second with $5 million. Look Who's Talking actually gained money in its second weekend, won its second weekend with $14.1 million. Both of those first two weekends broke the standing record for the top-grossing October debuts to that point. This was a five-week number one movie in America, remained in the top spot for more than a month, finally lost in week six to the debuting Harlem Nights, but it finished ahead of the debuting Little Mermaid. Week six of Look Who's Talking outgrossed the debut weekend of The Little Mermaid. The Little Mermaid, not a number one movie in America.
Disney Renaissance hadn't happened yet.
No.
Right?
Expectations were low.
It was like, I don't want to see another Oliver and Company.
Right. Disney, what have they done lately? Let's see Kirstie Alley and Bruce Willis not really make jokes, just say phrases. Again, too much editorializing. It spent 13 weeks hovering around the top 10. There was one 12th place finish in the middle there, but for the most part, 3+ months in the top 10, earning $140 million, fourth overall for 1989, behind only Batman, Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, and Lethal Weapon 2.
Holy shit.
Yeah. And you're watching, you're like, this movie, right. Everyone went.
Really?
Everybody. It was followed quickly by Look Who's Talking 2, which came out only 14 months later. Look Who's Talking 2 was not a number one movie in America. It debuted in second behind Home Alone. That was during the endless Home Alone reign. Look Who's Talking Now came in 1993. By this point, the children were old enough to talk for themselves, so it was the dogs that had the voiceover. Danny DeVito and Diane Keaton voiced the dogs. That was a box office bomb. It debuted in sixth, made less than $11 million total.
Oof.
Is this the entirety of the Look Who's Talking Now universe? No. There were 35 episodes of the TGIF series Baby Talk.
Oh, yeah.
A TV spinoff, which aired between March of 91 and May of 1992, back down to one baby voiced by Tony Danza in the series. This was the third recipient of the Kids' Choice Award for Favorite Movie. The
like on
kids,
Nickelodeon?
Yeah, this the Nickelodeon Kids' Choice Awards. This was the third winner of Favorite Movie. The kids picked this movie over Batman and Back to the Future 2.
What?
Batman's scary, Back to the Future 2 is bad.
It's not
I suppose you're going to argue that this movie is also bad.
All right. What?
You have a more solid argument that this movie is bad than that Back to the Future 2 is bad.
I would rather watch this movie than Back to the Future
what?
Part
2. I would rather watch
gonna have
to,
part
3.
We're going to have to save that for when we finally get to Back to the Future.
Okay.
Yeah, kids, I don't know what was going on with you. And I was a kid at this time, and I would not have made that choice.
I will tell you, I do think I know. And I like this movie. I don't think it's good, but I like it. I have affection for it. And again, like, I remember liking it a lot when I was a kid. And part of that was, oh my God, look at the sperm. But I think that as a young child who can speak, but is not listened to, there is something very compelling about even the babies have an adult personality and they are not heard at all, right? I think that that was what drew me in.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That's.
And honestly, the big surprise for me watching this as an adult, and I have watched it once before as an adult, because at some point I went, I'm pretty sure the baby ends up driving a car. So, is that there's actually not that much Bruce Willis in
no!
it.
No! Like
there's a lot of Kirstie Alley and John Travolta flirting with no involvement from the baby.
It's barely the baby. Look Who's Talking. It's John and Kirstie the whole time.
Yeah.
And like this long run of her bad dates, like you could have montaged that pretty easily and saved us all 10 or 15 minutes.
There are already a lot of montages.
That's true.
Yeah.
The Kids' Choice Award for Favorite Movie has continued uninterrupted. It is alive and well. The most recent was about a year ago now, so for films from 2020. That winner was Wonder Woman 1984 over Doolittle, Hamilton.
No.
Not technically a movie, but anyway. Hubie Halloween, Mulan, and Sonic the Hedgehog. So, kids.
Year.
Yeah. Finally, some alternate casting. Bruce Willis, no more than the sixth choice on this list. Notable conflicts prevented Chevy Chase, who was filming Christmas Vacation.
Okay.
Both Dan Aykroyd and Bill Murray, who were filming Ghostbusters 2, Steve Martin, who was filming Parenthood, and John Candy, who was filming Uncle Buck, all unavailable. Then it eventually got down to Bruce Willis.
Was Bruce already, I'm assuming Die Hard had already happened and all that stuff?
Die Hard was out. And what's the sitcom? That
Moonlighting.
Moonlighting.
Which is not a sitcom, really.
Dramedy?
Yeah, it's a dramedy. It's a comedic hour-long show.
Yeah. So I would say that Bruce Willis was probably the better choice anyway, just because his voice is so much more recognizable and it's just more absurd for that voice to come out of a baby.
I feel like Chevy would have been would have made for a slightly better movie. Just like in Fletch mode, in the dripping I'm better than you even though I'm a baby. That would have worked.
But I like that the baby is just innocent. Like, so much of the baby's motivation is like he wants to hang out with his buddy John Travolta, which I like. It's cute.
Travolta also not the first choice. This is one of John Travolta's 14 comebacks.
Yeah, that's what Dan was saying.
He had
like
a hit.
His second, like the second renaissance. This is the second coming of John Travolta.
Right. He only got the part because conflicts prevented John Stamos from accepting the role. He wanted to do it, and the Full House producers would not give him time off to go film Look Who's Talking. Uncle Jesse was just too important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, Yeah, I don't blame Kirstie Alley. I'm with Robin. I think she's funny. I think that some of the laughs are just her being, you know, witty and acerbic with the character. I just wonder when someone was going to write the jokes. Like, I don't hate it. I'm not sitting there going, ugh, you know, but I was kind of bored because they forgot to. Was it easier to make people laugh? This is always the question, because you watch a comedy classic and comedy had a much different rhythm, you know, until the millennium, basically. And you're like, oh, there's so few jokes in this stuff. Were people easier to entertain?
Probably.
I think that our expectation of jokes per minute has dramatically changed.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Like density of jokes.
I think they were just relying too heavily on the fact that it's a baby with Bruce Willis's voice. And like nobody wrote the jokes for
it. I mean, my two favorite jokes in the movie have nothing to do with the baby. Well, the first one is Kirstie Alley reading 80% of mothers have postpartum depression. And she goes, well, it's not going to happen to me. And then they slam cut to her sobbing. And then my second favorite one is she's hanging out with her dad and her sassy mom, Olympia Dukakis, who is always a delight.
I love.
And basically talking about, you know, like, do you actually have passionate feelings for dad? And she's like, what's not to like about him? And then they show him reading Accountancy Weekly and he's laughing at accountant jokes. That was like my favorite moment of the entire movie.
The dad did have an excellent lineup of hats. They established the dad's character entirely through novelty hats, which I did appreciate. There's two excellent crossovers from my particular television wheelhouse. House when Major Briggs from Twin Peaks is delivering the baby in nice, calm, reassuring fashion. But even more concerning, the cigarette smoking man from X-Files shows up to give her drugs. Don't take them.
Oh, wow.
I've seen how this goes.
I was like, oh, so this is filmed in Canada. And Colin was like, yeah. What? It's totally filmed in Canada. Anytime you see those actors, it's like, oh, we're in Vancouver.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hated it.
Camila's like, let's cut through the like equivocating.
It's like an hour in, I go in and pause, and I was like, we're an hour in. It's like an only hour and a half movie. I was like, we're an hour in and nothing has happened. Nothing has happened. And I was very much bored, and like a lot of the like there were some moments for me. But it's just like, you know, like I said, I couldn't catch the rhythm of the movie. And there was some weird stuff that it made me feel like John didn't have a script or didn't read the script, or, you know, like there was no, like he wasn't really delivering on the other end of the conversation. I don't know. It was all very strange to me and I just couldn't catch it.
Yeah, it's just such an odd choice to wrap a movie around this baby has, we're hearing a baby's inner monologue, which let's not dive into the theological and scientific implications of saying that a personality is fully formed from the moment you're a sperm.
Right. Like you said, single cell organism. I'm like, it's not even a cell, buddy.
Yeah.
It's a gamete.
But when you're like, okay, it's a high concept comedy. Great. We know those. We like those. Sure. And then for it to be so flat and dull and so slow, to Camila's point, the note that I made was it was at 66 minutes of a 92 minute movie, like 20 minutes before the credits, that she was like still judging him. It's right. Like, what has happened? Where have we been for 2/3 plus of this movie? Like, babies, right? Like,
I think her fantasy, you know, she goes on all these dates and then she fantasizes raising a child with those fathers. Those moments typically worked for me. But the fantasy with her and John Travolta, it is icky. That's when she feels like a bitch to me, right? That it's like, oh, he's low class and dirty, and our kids will be low class and dirty, and so will I.
Which is so like, jacked up, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't like that.
That was the other thing. She was like really materialistic in the sense of, you know, in choosing her man, just like it was mostly about, you know, what's in his bank account. And then when she would, you know, she was like, you know, you're not responsible, like trying to throw that on. I'm like, you got knocked up by a married man. Like, I don't No, if you're...
How weird is it? In the very first scene when she's doing George Segal's taxes and he's trying to seduce her and she's like, you know, of course I'm in love with you. You're such a good father. What right. a weird reason to right. love the married man you're having an affair with.
Right, right. And, mm-hmm. like, and she's saying all these things like in his plus column to John about, you know, like, you know, again, like, and how responsible is he for knocking someone up while he is married and has a family? And she's like, and he's a good person. He's a good father. If he were a good father, he wouldn't have stuck his dick in you. Like, it's
yeah.
not.
Yeah. Yeah. And it all is weirder knowing that she's writing this about Harold Ramis, by the way. Right. And herself. Yes. And herself.
You just
right?
like literally, like, you just like physically cringed.
It's gross. But like, I do think, I know that both of you are going to disagree with me, but I do think that Kirstie Alley and John Travolta have chemistry.
I
like the scene where they first start kissing. And first of all, I love Kirstie Alley's purple bra. Want that bra. But what she says to him, she's like, I want this. You make me laugh and you're such a good kisser. That resonated with me.
That's real. That's real talk right there.
Exactly. Right. I was like, oh, that's really, that's all women want. That's so much more meaningful to me than, of course I love you. You're a good father. What?
Right. Yeah. What? It brings me back to like the scene in Grindhouse, Death Proof, where she's like, you got two jobs, kiss good and don't get my hair wet. Like,
I like the word yutz. You don't hear the word yutz. He says, who's this yutz? You know, now that we're more comfortable in swearing, we've lost some of those non-swears that were very useful.
Yeah. Really good point.
That is.
Yeah. Okay, here's a complaint, a very unique complaint and a very serious one. I don't know if you stayed through the credits.
I did.
There's a pop song over the credits. I think it's My Love Opened the Door.
That's correct.
I think. Yeah. When it ends, it's silent the rest of the way. They don't turn on the score. The song's supposed to end, and then you play the score for the rest. It's just quiet. What? Who went home early? Who said, does this song last all the way through the credits? I don't know. Probably. Cut print. Let's go to dinner. What?
Monsters.
Not okay. I feel that that's emblematic of the laziness of the overall project.
This is true. This is, if nothing else, you can count that as to why this movie is. That's why I hated it. It's just pure laziness. Nobody was really trying.
Yeah, I'm glad that Robin, you found something. Mm-hmm. I found little. I found very, very little.
Not even when the kid is talking to the other kids. I can see why they went in this direction for the sequel. I also do think the Joan Rivers cameo stinger is pretty good. But like when the little girl's like, they cut off my curls.
Yeah, I mean, I don't.
No, that was good.
That's why I hated it, because I liked the concept, like the idea of, yes, we're going to hear this monologue of this baby, of this child in an adult voice. And that was one of the things that I was like, oh, this might be fun to go ahead and watch. And then it just barely happened. It's like,
you're right.
Like 30% of the movie. That's it. And it's like, you set this whole thing up to tell me that like a baby was going to be talking like adult and I'm barely hearing anything from him. That's outrageous. So.
Yeah. I think that the B- rom-com plot works for me because I'm a sucker. And then the talking baby stuff, I'm like, great, icing. And so I end up with a B grade for this movie.
Yeah. Well, let's rate it and let's see how much Robin's tempered enthusiasm can help it out. I mean, I'll give it a generous 38. I couldn't get into that. The 40s to me are like, it's not good, but I couldn't right. quite get there. But I guess I don't hate it. Now here's a number, a lower number, Camila.
32.
Okay.
Like, I agree.
I
right.
Y'all are being reasonable. Yeah. I was worried we were going to be in single digits territory. Well, no. I was gonna be like, come on.
No, like 30s are like, you know, I don't want to watch this again, but if it happens to be on, I'm okay with it. 40 is like, you know, that's fine. I might want to watch it. But yeah, like this is like anything below 30 is like, don't let this darken my doorstep ever again.
Better than Hardball. It's better than Hardball.
That's correct.
Robin?
I'm going to give it a 63.
Okay. Okay.
I thought you were going to see, we're all more reasonable. I thought you were like inching towards 80.
Right.
No,
me too.
No. Listen, I enjoyed watching this. I remembered liking it as a kid, but it's not good.
Yeah. 44 and a third is your average score. 44 and
John Travolta
one third.
Barely gets to dance. Like, he like does like a shoulder shimmy and that's it.
Yeah. But they play Staying Alive.
They do, which is awkward.
Oh, I missed that.
It's when they're pushing the baby stroller.
I was mm-hmm. getting snacks.
Down the sidewalk, yeah. You know, like you do, like John Travolta thinks. You two take us through the bingo card because I forgot to bring mine with me.
Oh, I totally forgot about it as well. Let's pull it up and see if anything is in there.
Well, female director.
Yay!
It only took a year or so.
Oh, I think that's been there since before the pandy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is there a Kiss in the Rain? No. Babysitter.
Nope. No. Babysitter.
Family Secrets.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
She says he's a sperm donor.
Yep. Was there a wait I can explain moment?
I don't think so.
Damn, all that, and I still don't have a bingo.
I know.
Yeah, I don't think I got it either. Still, that's a pretty good week. Family Secrets, Babysitter, and Woman Director.
All right. Come on, let the next one be the Notebook. And then I'll have a Kiss in the Rain.
We'll be kissing in the rain. Is there a carnival in the Notebook? I've never seen the Notebook.
What?
I know.
What?
It came out during a pop culture dark spot for me.
But I feel like
I never caught up with it.
Something that you would have like purposefully been like, yeah, I need to watch.
I don't know. I hear it's sad.
Well,
I'm not crazy about Ryan Gosling. I'm sorry.
I mean, that's fine. But yeah, I mean, it's just, it is kind of sad.
Don't wait around. Not a number one movie in America.
Aww.
Oh,
that's surprising.
That is surprising.
It looks like it debuted in fourth.
Wow. It's a movie that women of a certain age really love, and they don't go mm-hmm. to the movies that much. So maybe it really picked up steam when it started airing on basic cable.
Probably.
God, what a cursed weekend. It debuted in fourth behind Fahrenheit 9/11 in first, White Chicks in second.
Oh my God.
And the second weekend of Dodgeball, A True Underdog Story in
what?
Third. So.
Wow.
Cursed.
Well, that's what happened. It came out in the middle of summer rather than, you know, in a good rom-com time.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway,
it's not a
rom,
though. It's a rom-drum.
Well, rom of any sort.
It should have come out in February,
drums.
Is what we're saying.
Right. February
yes,
or Christmas.
Absolutely. It's time for You Can't Handle the Truth. Let me give a recommendation. I just drove all around and wound up in Chicago for about 24 hours and went to the Music Box Theater, a famous, cool, indie-type theater that was one of the coolest indie cinemas I've ever seen, with great programming. They were teasing their series called Highs and Lows, which is a pretentious art film paired with a broad comedy along similar themes, like Y Tu Mama Tambien and Dumb and Dumber.
I like
it. It was the road movie double feature. Just a super cool place and highly recommended if you live in Chicago, you know about it. But if you happen to be passing through. Also, I saw Jackass Forever and Camila's objections. You know, Camila may be one of these highfalutin fancy types that doesn't think it's funny when a guy gets hit in the balls really hard.
Football in the groin, hit a football in the groin.
I
do, just
will
not for
laugh
2 hours.
Every time.
Like, one of my weak spots of comedy is like to watch one man slap another man. That comedy gold for me.
No, as with every Jackass movie I've ever seen, I didn't. When it ended, I was like, aw, I wanted more.
Oh my God.
I will say, you know, when they get into a lot of the anatomical and a lot of the poop stuff and a lot of the fluids stuff, I'm less engaged. there is more of that than ever before. Because they're getting old, they can only fall down so many times. They're not in their 20s anymore. But they did bring in a younger cast. They did diversify the cast slightly, which is good. Look, listen, people get hit real hard and fall down and get hurt. I'm laughing every day. If a guy is skateboarding down the sidewalk and then a giant fist comes out of nowhere and punches him off of his skateboard, I will laugh every time. So
I like that all three of our preemptive vetoes came up in today's episode.
Did they? What were yours?
Because mine was Fahrenheit 9/11.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yours was a Jackass, I can't remember which, and Sean's was Ghostbusters Afterlife because of its disrespect to Harold Ramis.
Interesting.
Little did he know!
Yeah, if you like Jackass, go see Jackass. If you don't, it's not like this is the one where things change. Kind of the premise of this one is, we can do this stuff again because it's still funny and it's been a while. That's what I got, Jackass Forever and visiting the Music Box Theater. Oh, and the Cinemark is doing a secret movie series of the first Wednesday, I think, of every month. They hint at it a little bit on Twitter, but you don't know exactly what you're buying a ticket for.
Interesting.
And it's more deep than you'd think. Last night was My Bloody Valentine, the original from 81.
Ooh.
I heard a woman say, oh, I thought it was going to be Groundhog Day. No, this is a more interesting series. They did Krampus in December, which is a little bit of a deep cut, and then January was The Game. We've been talking about The Game. These are more, you know, thoughtful secret movies than you might do.
I like
That's
it.
Kinda
so,
cool.
Yeah,
go for that. Robin, what you watching?
It's been a long time since we recorded, so we haven't talked about The Last Duel, which I loved.
Oh, really?
Right? Yeah, I cannot believe how much I loved The Last Duel. I had to not watch several parts of it because it's really gross. It's very much like let's hack some bodies up stuff.
Wow.
But story, like the actual story, the non-gross parts just really worked for me. Like, and I loved Ben Affleck in it. Whatever the hell he is doing in that movie is weird, but I love it. And then also, like, I would have told you that I never needed to see another graphic rape scene ever again in my life. And I feel like this movie somehow found a way to make me think it was a good thing to have in the film.
What?
And I don't know if that's good, if that's not something that you want to watch, don't watch this movie. But I was incredibly impressed that they pulled that off.
Well, I think you don't want to say liked about that graphic rape scene. The thing I appreciated about it was
not
the three tellings of that story, there's not one that implies that it was like consensual. There's not one that's like, oh, she was totally on board. Like it kind of illustrates like, yeah, the presence of a he said she said does not, you know, make it okay in any telling, which is a more nuanced and supportable way to do that than pretty much any other movie I can name.
I keep meaning to go back and check, but I did notice that when they do the title card for the final, the truth, according to, and then it says lady, her name fades away and it just says the truth.
Yeah. Yeah. That was cool.
I'm 90% positive that it does not happen with the other title cards.
I'm pretty sure you're right. I had the same, like, I'm not going to double check this, but I think that's what I saw.
If that is correct, that is an excellent, subtle way to handle that.
Yeah. No, it's in my top 10. It got overshadowed by like the discourse around it with Ridley Scott being like, meh, people don't go to the movie. But
also,
like, it was a great movie.
Yeah. Okay. Also, I really like this much more than the day and date, like on streaming in theater in the same day. This whole in the theater 2 months later on HBO, that's what I want.
Yeah.
Right? Because then if I can be fucked to go see it in the theater, I get a better experience. It feels more worthwhile, like worth my time, my money, and my COVID risk. But if I can't, then I don't have to wait very long. I love it. I love it. That's what we should do moving forward.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. I also watched Passing, and I want to like it more than I did. I found it myself incredibly distracted by aesthetic things about it. Like, I really loved the costumes. And then I was like, I'm paying way more attention to the costumes than I am to this story. Mm-hmm. I thought Tessa Thompson was really, really good in it, but it felt kind of flimsy.
I don't.
Did either of you watch it?
Not yet. I don't know if I am or not. I don't want to see Alexander Skarsgård say the N-word.
Watch it then.
Yeah, because I think I saw it in the trailer. I was like, and that just kind of went to the back burner.
Yep. You don't need to watch it. No. There's a lot to like about it, but I think ultimately it's not very good.
Yeah, I might read the book.
Yeah.
Because I don't. I'm intrigued by the story, but yeah.
Camila?
Well, I've got a lot here. Let's see. Bruised on Netflix. Watchable. Totally watchable with Halle Berry. She's a boxer or MMA fighter, which what the fuck? And also she directed it, which I was shocked by. And there's a little boy that plays her son and he says not one word throughout the entire thing. And I'm not going to spoil it, but he is so good. He's probably like 8, 9 years old maybe. But yeah, you'd be like, The acting that this child conveyed just through facial expressions and body movements and just like not saying anything was amazing. And I just want to hats off to that young man. I watched Together with James McAvoy, and I don't know
the woman's name. It's like one of those. It's there's a couple just basically kind of talking about their time, and they're going through like the COVID and the pandemic and quarantine and everything, and like what just kind of dealing with that whole thing. And it was interesting.
Yeah. I watch some, like every now and then I'm going to be like, oh, it's this person's quarantine movie. All right. But not all of them, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
No Man of God was good.
I don't think I've heard of that. What is that?
Elijah Wood plays the guy who got to interview Ted Bundy in prison. Ooh. And who like this, who had like a relationship with him and all that stuff. Like, not, they don't want to say friendship, but they got close. Bundy trusted him. And I didn't want to see it for the longest time, but a woman directed it. And I forget her name. And so like that changes a lot, and just,
yeah.
And how, and what, how the light that they portray Bundy in, the guy who played Bundy was amazing. Like, he looks like him. Like, he wore, and like afterwards I had to like, I watched like a snippet of a Bundy, actual Bundy footage. And that guy like was amazing, like picking up his body language and everything, just like all his gestures and the way he spoke. And, there's just like an interesting thing that was done where, you know, most of the movie is Bundy and Elijah, you know, talking and being, and Bundy being interviewed and stuff. But the woman, the director, I didn't look up her name, but she made it a point to represent his victims in some way in this film, which that every woman that was shown, like she didn't have a speaking role or anything like that. And they made this movie like during quarantine, I think. And just like, you know, a random woman that was like behind the counter or a camera woman or something like that. But she put her in clothing to represent one of his victims. That was like a kind of a nod just to.
Wait, how? I don't understand. How does that work?
I don't know if it's like just like the clothing that they were wearing when he murdered them, or or if it was just like clothing that was in a photo that was our, that was used a lot when they were talking about the woman, the victim. But like the woman that it's in the movie, that's just like, she's just, you know, like a clerk behind in the store. She has no part, she has no real, she has no character name or anything like that. She has no consequence in this film other than she is there to represent victim number three in Ted Bundy's reign, because she's wearing the same hat or same kind of dress that she, that, that his victim was wearing. So
that's really interesting.
Yeah. And I didn't pick that up until like after I saw it. But what has really got me fucked up, and I am so late to the game because I thought this was just a stupid like little documentary movie about cats on the internet. So I didn't watch it until this weekend. Don't Fuck With Cats. Did you guys watch that thing?
No.
I'm so fucked up.
No.
I'm so fucked up, and I have nobody to talk to about it.
I'm sorry. I have seen other people tweeting about this and it's saying the same thing. Like, just watch it. Talk to me after you're done.
I just, it's on Netflix. It's about like how these internet sleuths, just like random people just like doing their thing on Facebook and on the interwebs and stuff. They come across this terrible video of this guy murdering a cat. And they all are like, go into sleuth mode and like try to find him, and like they basically like, and the guy progresses and he kills another cat, and then he kills another animal, I think, and then he films himself and posts it murdering him, murdering a guy. And so like these people, it's basically the story about how they, these regular people, helped police hunt this guy down and find him. And just like,
wow,
this is, it's a, I think it's a 3-part docuseries on Netflix, and I am just like so fucked up by it. Like, I don't know what it is. Like, these, I think these are the same people that produced and directed The Imposter, a documentary years ago that also kind of fucked me up. I don't know what style it is, what it is they, what it is they do, whatever, what voodoo that they have, but I was unable to sleep after I watched it. And I have watched I've watched and read a lot of like creepy shit in my lifetime. And I can only probably like, this is maybe like the third thing that has like fucked up my sleeping habits, as to where like I was like, my stomach is in knots, I'm anxious, and it's just really messed up. And then like their next thing that's new on Netflix now is The Tinder Swindler, which is another one of those, like, is a documentary about some dude who's like going on Tinder, misrepresenting himself and like a con man on Tinder. so yeah, Don't Fuck With Cats.
I might be good. I prefer my disturbing content to be safely in the realm of fiction. Like, wow, they came up with some ridiculous murders.
Right.
Good thing that wasn't real. Good night.
Yeah, the only gripe, I mean, other than it really fucking with my head and emotions, is that the title in this, you know, this probably came out a year ago, maybe 2 years ago, and the title is what kept me from watching it. But the real tragedy is, like, overshadowed by that ridiculous title of Don't Fuck With Cats. Yeah. And it's like, you know, this, there was a man that actually lost his life to this guy. And
yeah. Yes.
June Lee, I believe, was his name. And he, you know, we don't hear about him until, like, part three. So.
That's a very good point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's, if there's anybody out there who would like help me unpack this.
I need please reach out.
To talk to you. Yes, please. I don't want to burden husband with making him watch
the Twitter
this.
Handle?
The _ rugged angel.
Yeah.
I'm so jacked up.
One of my issues with true crime is because unless there's, and this sounds like they got him, a lot of the time it's like, I just listened to a great podcast series called Gone South about an unsolved murder in Louisiana. And it's this great, like, exploration of everyone in this woman's life. And it was great. It was very compelling. And no spoilers, but it is one of those that ends with, like, we know who it is. It's really clear who it is, but they won't confess and we can't quite prove it. So... the end.
Have
and it's like, oh, I just want at the last minute to go, and then we got a letter and she said she did it. Okay, great, now I'm good.
Right. I was like, and I'm and I get to the point, like, I can start to pick up on clues on how these, like, true crime documentaries are gonna go, because I don't want to spoil it for myself at, you know, and look and see if, like, this person's caught. But I start to pick up on clues and, like, you know, things like they were using these people's real name and shit and, like, where they work. I was like, okay, like, the people who helped catch him. I was like, yeah, I'm pretty sure they caught this guy. Otherwise, these people would be still,
right,
like, in hiding.
Well, let's draw a movie. It could be anything. We could veto it. You know, it's and everything's on the table. It's early in the year, everybody. But what we've landed on to follow up a movie this time, it's, ooh, speaking of being fucked up, it's The Land Before Time.
Oh, yeah. I just watched All Dogs Go to Heaven, and Colin was like, what is happening? Why are we doing this? The voice of one of the characters in both of those movies was murdered by her father?
What?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, we're watching this.
I'm what in the entire fuck? What?
Maybe I should have saved that. I don't know. Maybe I should have let you watch it and be sad on the merits then find out.
Well, now I'm going to look for that podcast because I'm sure it exists.
Oh, man, I have clear memories of this from my childhood.
Me too.
I never watched
it. And it's only 69 minutes long.
All right. Yes,
there
nice.
We go.
Bless your soul. It's on Peacock.
I'm surprised that was a number one movie. It feels like something that existed solely as a VHS tape.
There's like 10 straight-to-video sequels. The kids I babysat for love them.
We skipped multiple segments, but no one cares about Look Who's Talking, so we're going to let that go.
Yeah, I forgot to watch the trailer. I forgot that was a thing.
Oh, yeah, I totally forgot.
yeah, there was nothing great in it. Well, here's the interesting thing in Letterboxd. This is just for Robin. There was one interesting Letterboxd list. Highest grossing film each year without an Oscar nomination.
Ooh.
Someone put together every, like, it's usually four or five, and this is the fourth grossing, highest grossing film, and received no Oscar nominations. That's interesting. More to the point, Look Who's Talking came out October 13th, 1989. What was the number one song in America?
What was the date again?
October.
October 13, 1989.
We didn't start the fire.
No.
I'm trying to, like, put myself in the brain space of my brother is, I guess this would be, okay, I saw the movie on TV, so
that
my brother wouldn't be born yet.
That dance.
How about New Kids on the Block?
Close, but no.
Okay.
Close. Menudo?
Close in both time and genre. Well, is that the same genre? This person is certainly in the news.
In the news?
Janet Jackson.
Correct.
Miss You Much?
That's the one. I'm surprised. That seemed like, with two documentaries out, it seemed like one of the two of you was here to talk about Janet Jackson.
I fell asleep the night the Janet Jackson documentary was on.
What?
And it's not like streaming or anything. So yeah. I'm just like patiently waiting for them to re-air it tomorrow.
But listen, it was everything. My only gripe is that shit should have been 3 days. Should have been 3 days long. 3 days long. it was everything. Like, I was pre-gaming for the whole thing, and I stayed up and watched it in real time. I did not just set the DVR on both nights. Janet, forever.
She's the best.
At Camila's house, the Super Bowl is a new Janet Jackson documentary.
It's, yeah. And, you know, also Super Bowl is, like, now Janet Jackson Appreciation Day.
That's right.
That's true.
Forever.
That's true.